I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm John Murphy and Chris Brown in for Steve Tasker. Getting set for the combine. Everybody in the NFL getting set for the combine, including our next guest. He is a sideline reporter for the Fox Sports Network, National College Football Insider for The Athletic, the author of the book, The Quarterback, The Making of Modern Quarterbacks, considered the authority on what goes into becoming an NFL quarterback. Happy to have Bruce Feldman on the line with us. Bruce, John Murphy, and Chris Brown here in Buffalo. Thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, guys. Good to be on with you.
Loved your post on The Athletic about the freaks to look for, the 12 biggest freaks to watch for at the scouting combine. That's kind of what we're all looking for, right? The guys who just jump off the page and get your attention at the combine this week.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a unique deal this week where reality is the most important stuff that goes on at the combine is the medical examinations and the interviews. But that stuff's all behind closed doors. It's really the workout stuff and the stuff that happens on camera that kind of gets people's attention. And, you know, look, you want to see, and I've covered a lot of these guys in college, you want to see if all the stories about, hey, Rashawn Gary ran a 4.57 at 287 pounds last year at Michigan, according to the Michigan staff, is he really going to test that freakish? And then you have other guys. I mean, the guy I wrote a lot about in there today, John Kaminsky, a Division II guy, a defensive lineman, University of Charleston. He was a high school quarterback at 215 pounds. Now he's 285. And, you know, the guys I've talked to who've worked out with him say he could run in the 4.6s and his stock will really blow up this week. So, I mean, this is a really good window into it. And that story, like you said, on The Athletic just kind of spotlights some of the guys you really want to keep an eye on this week.
Maybe more than anything, though, Bruce, is even more than where these guys might test, is where a lot of these players have come from in terms of body composition. I mean, Andre Dillard, the Washington State offensive tackle that you profiled on that list. I mean, just to think 5 years ago, the guy's 6'4", 240, and, you know, now he's playing at 305, and he's considered one of the best tackles in the draft, and then you're saying he might run in the 4.8s. I mean, it's almost like the athleticism never left him. I'm just amazed at the weight some of these people can carry at the speed they carry it at.
Yeah, and in that story, you know, Clay McGuire, who's the offensive line coach and recruited him at Washington State, said, yeah, the 10 and 20 yard splits, which they time for, he goes, he's one of the fastest guys that we had on the team. He thinks he may run in the 4.8s. As you said, was 6'4", 240. Now, it's interesting with offensive linemen, because especially at a school like Washington State, it's not Alabama, it's not Ohio State, you're going to project more because you're not going to get that guy who might be ready-made. And so they're, you know, as Clay was explaining, he goes, when you're the offensive line coach for Mike Leach, he's going to take five every year, and you're going to project. And they knew that Andre Dillard was really athletic, that his dad was a former Washington State player, and they liked his genetics. And you're like, okay, when his in a good nutrition program and a good weight program, and just with 4 or 5 years, they're not sure if he's going to be 305, but they think, you know, he can help us down the road because it's like, you know, the athleticism is the hard part. To have a big guy with a big frame with those kind of feet, it's the other part. If you can't move at all and you're 6'5", 300, I mean, you're going to get exposed, especially in a team that throws it as much as they do.
Right.
On line with Bruce Feldman, National College Football Insider for The Athletic, who's written about the 12 freaks to watch for at the Combine this week. One of them got my attention on your list. A couple did, actually, Bruce. But DK Metcalf, the receiver from Ole Miss, who you talk about how he's shredded. He's got a teammate who'll be there as well, a very productive college football teammate. But Metcalf looks like the type of physical specimen that'll get people's attention this week, huh?
Yeah, I mean, his dad, Terrence Metcalf, played at Ole Miss, played in the NFL for the Bears for a while as an O-lineman. I mean, this guy, when I talked to coaches at Ole Miss, they said, as big as he was, or big as he is, 6'3", around 225, ran in the 4.4s, and broad jumped 11.1. So it's not just that he's some ridiculous, freaky-looking, shredded specimen. Now, I think one of the concerns that NFL teams are going to want to see is, you know, is he too big? You know, everybody remembers David Boston. He almost looked like a bodybuilder out there. And he was a star player at Ohio State and then almost got so big that you lose the kind of flexibility and the things you need to do as a football player, certainly as a wide receiver. Now, I don't think DK Metcalf is that big, but he is a chiseled, impressive-looking guy. And I think what NFL people are going to want to see this week is how flexible is he, and not just how strong he is, because it's more than just an eyeball test out there, but just definitely as a physical specimen, he is something to see.
There's one more receiver I want to ask you about, and that's Andy Isabella, the UMass receiver. And I watched him at the Senior Bowl a month and a half ago and thought, okay, he's a nice little player. I guess I didn't see it on the field. His 40 time is spectacular, and he's going to open up some eyes when he runs a 40 at the combine this week, I would think, right?
Yeah, no offers out of high school other than Mark Whipple, former Steelers assistant, was the head coach at UMass and was looking for speed. And this kid has legit track speed. Remember, Denzel Ward from Ohio State last year was the fastest cornerback in Indy, was clocked at a 4.32. This guy handily beat Denzel Ward in a 100-meter race in high school, ran a 10.51, Ward ran a 10.68. He's got legit big-time track speed. He's strong. He's also, I think this is a key thing. You know, Whipple told me, he said, whenever we played really fast defenses in college, you know, people go, UMass, it's not big-time football, it's a smaller FBS program. When he played Florida, when he played Mississippi State, when he played USF, and also when he played Georgia, he ran away from really fast defenses. He put up big numbers against those guys. So it's not like just the guy who was feasted on lower-level competition. He compared him to me to Travis Benjamin, who he coached at the University of Miami. And Travis Benjamin ran 4.36. I think a lot of people would be disappointed if Andy Isabella doesn't even run even further, faster than that. Now, he's not going to test great in the jumps because the guy who trained him said, you know what, I think he can get in the 4.2s, though. So keep an eye on him. He's a guy that I think a lot of people are excited to see this week.
But projecting him as a slot receiver, as most have done, it's the change of direction, too, and he appears to have that because he's got such a low center of gravity. So short shuttle, that number is going to be important for a guy like him as well, will it not be?
It will, and he's a guy they think should be sub-4.2. Now, you look at some of the guys who've run blazing short shuttle times. You know, Julian Edelman, actually, when he was in the MAC, ran a really, really fast time. Deion Branch, who obviously had a great career with the Patriots as well, he ran a ridiculous time in the threes, and there aren't a lot of guys who crack that 4.1 range. Andy Isabella should be in that. I mean, and that's definitely one of the times we all for years have gotten so fixated on the 40, but some of these other numbers, as you mentioned, especially as it relates to other positions, are the ones that I think a lot of people are going to look at their stopwatch and go, okay, what did he do here? Because again, that's a really interesting metric to see just what guys will do. I mean, Wes Welker, I think, was in a 4.01. Yeah. Julian Edelman was a 3.92. You go back to Branch, I think he was in the mid 3.7. So we'll see what we get here from Andy Isabella.
Bruce Feldman from The Athletic and Fox Sports sideline reporter. Hey, Bruce, we'll watch for those freaks you write about. We'll also, everybody keeps an eye on the quarterbacks. Who has the most to prove among the quarterback group at the Combine this week, would you think?
Well, I think we're going to want to see just how physically big Kyler Murray is, not just how tall. They know he's probably going to be somewhere in the 5'9 range. It's just like, is he going to be slight, or is he going to look like he can take a little bit of a pounding? I think that's really going to be telling. Is he actually 205 pounds? I mean, when you see Russell Wilson, shorter quarterback, Baker Mayfield, shorter quarterback, those guys are thicker guys. I mean, that wasn't what Kyler Murray looked like in college. Now, maybe he's put on 15 pounds since then to get ready for this. And we'll see if he's maintained that, you know, the great speed that we had. I think I want to see him. I'm not sure, you know, when you have a guy like a Drew Lock, Jarrett Stidham, those guys, I mean, I've seen a lot of them in college. They will throw it well in this setting. The stuff I think you won't be able to see here is the stuff in the games, which is, you know, I would not be surprised if, you know, Drew Lock, the guy from Missouri, put up big numbers, and Jarrett Stidham, I would not be surprised if they impress people here in this setting. If the question is, that's, you know, it's not just throwing it around in shorts and a T-shirt. I mean, I think when people see Dwayne Haskins from Ohio State, they'll be impressed. His film, and he's played against much better defenses and excelled against them, where those other guys, I don't know if they've been as sharp. Those are guys I want to see. But I really want to see what Kyler Murray, you know, how he looks physically there.
Go ahead.
It's not only how he looks, though. I mean, yeah, if he carries it well, that's all well and good. But he's still got a test with 20 extra pounds on his frame, and I'm wondering what he might cost himself on the back end there, even though he might allay the fears of his durability by adding 20 pounds of meat to his frame.
Right, and the bar here is going to be people are expecting him to run like 4.38. You know, he is. Baker Mayfield told me a year ago he's the fastest guy on our team. Well, if he puts on 20 pounds and he runs 4.49, that's still really fast, certainly for a quarterback. But again, we're talking about a guy who is smaller. Is there going to be some trade off where he's put packed on some bulk? But if he's running around 4.5 as opposed to 4.38, it's still fast. But it's not quite the wow factor, and so I'm curious to see that because people are talking about him like he's going to be the fastest quarterback we've seen in a long time come through there. He's definitely going to be the smallest we've seen. So where does it add up? And I think you know one thing to keep in mind is he's phenomenal in college, just like Baker was. He didn't play the greatest defenses in college football in the Big 12, and when he played, stepped up. You know some of those he had a good but spotty performance against Alabama in the Orange Bowl. So I don't know if I see him as the lock some other people are saying he is at this point.
Hey Bruce, and as far as some of the other quarterbacks you mentioned, talking about Jarrett Stidham and Drew Locke, and they might excel in this format here at the combine. But you know, watching those two at the Senior Bowl, I didn't think either one of them excelled. In fact, I came away unimpressed with those two in particular at the Senior Bowl. I didn't see much there. What do you think?
Well, Locke put up big numbers in a system. He is still, I would say, you know, he's a good athlete, was a big-time basketball recruit. I don't see him as a top 15 pick. I can see why people will like him. You know, Stidham had a really up-and-down career, and I think when he was at Auburn, you know, how Gus Malzahn handled him. You hear a lot of rumblings under the surface about that probably wasn't the best situation for him. I think he's really talented. A year ago, I was out at the Elite 11 where they had a bunch of the top, not just high school quarterbacks, but college quarterbacks throwing. And he was one of the guys who would wow you, more so than some of the, you know, than I thought Locke did and some of the other guys, whether it was a Will Greer or there are guys in this class. But the performance on the field was so inconsistent. So, you know, just from talking to people who worked with him and everything, I feel like he's been underachieved a little bit, quite honestly. I mean, he's definitely talented. I expect that people will see him and they will come away impressed in this setting. But maybe he didn't stand up in the Senior Bowl as well as they thought. I think after coming through this process, I expect his stock to go up. I just don't know if it's going to be one of those, I don't want to say it's going to be Christian Hackenberg-esque, but when you have a guy who's a really, really high-rated recruit and the productivity doesn't match, now he had a better career than Hackenberg did. But again, I think sometimes you got to be a little weary of the guys who are the big, big-time recruits. People like to watch him throw in shorts and a T-shirt because they seem to be pretty smooth in that way. Blaine Gabbert was that way, to be honest, where he looked great in the informal stuff, and he's a good athlete. He was a big recruit. But then it doesn't quite translate when the actual game is being played. And that's the stuff I think you got to, you know, I don't envy the NFL people who are going to be investing in these guys.
The one other quarterback who's going to be at the combine this week that we wanted to ask you about is the Buffalo kid, Tyree Jackson. So, I mean, you could very easily put a highlight reel together with some of the plays he's made in his college career, but it's all the stuff in between that I think stamps him in most people's eyes as a project-type quarterback. So how much does that thin the suitors, the crop of suitors, for a guy that's going to need time on the job to develop and become a more consistent player?
Yeah, that's the concern. I mean, you have a guy who he had two really good receivers there at Buffalo who were like big, big-time, you know, college receivers. That helped. I think he was in a good system there with Lance Leipold and what they do. The physical arm talent's there. The part that concerns me, though, is he accurate enough? Is he going to make good enough decisions? I know he's been out here on the West Coast. They're intrigued by his talent. I think he's totally a developmental guy. In a lot of ways, I wonder, you know, what situation does he go to? Does he go somewhere where you know, they're going to be invested in him. But again, it's not like necessarily the starter is going to automatically want to take him under his wing and groom him. I think there'll be some stuff for people to like, and then some other stuff. You know, you can see the flat-footed throws where there's just a lot of natural arm strength. He is a big, imposing, physically talented kid. But again, if you're not that accurate, that's the part that would give me some pause. Again, I think he'll get drafted relatively highly, but you know, I go back a few years. Logan Thomas was at Virginia Tech, had a huge arm, six, you know, like similar size guy, 6'6", 240, looks like almost like a tight end. But some of the nature of the quarterbacking play, and it wasn't for Logan Thomas, is a pretty bright kid. Obviously, he's, you know, now playing tight end. I don't know if that's something people are going to see, the parallels of a big kid with a strong arm. Just maybe the accuracy isn't quite there to play quarterback at the NFL level or not, or at least be a starting quarterback. So it's going to be it's going to be an interesting evaluation for a lot of people to try to figure out where he can be, not just now, but where he is 2 years from now.
Speaking of accuracy, Bruce, and Bruce Feldman is our guest, the author of the book, The Quarterback, The Making of Modern Quarterbacks. You, I believe, were among many who questioned a year ago Josh Allen and his accuracy issues. You came here, did the Bills-Lions game this past season, saw Josh, you know, up close and personal from your perch as the sideline reporter. What did you think of Josh Allen when you saw him compared to what you thought about him coming out in the draft, and what do you think his prospects are for the future?
You know, I was impressed by how he handled things, and we talked to a lot of people in the building about him, and it was all positives. You know, he's still raw. I think a lot of the stuff when we had him, he was coming off a couple of games where his athleticism, which nobody questioned at the draft process, was on display. I mean, he ran it even probably better than people, as good as people thought of an athlete he was. I think he even, you know, took it to another level there with his competitiveness. And those are all big pluses. I think the challenge for him and for that staff is going to be, again, the accuracy and the consistency for him to keep developing. I mean, I think, you know, they have to surround him with better weapons. I mean, I really came away a fan of Robert Foster, the old Alabama receiver who's freakishly athletic. Mm-hmm. But was pretty unrefined, and I think they've nurtured him really well, and I give that kid a lot of credit. And I think when you have a season where you have a lot of injuries and a lot of things that just don't go right, you have some kid like that emerge. I think that was a really, you know, a cool little subplot to the rookie story that they had in Buffalo. But as far as Josh goes, I just think it's got to be, the burden is going to be on him to continue to refine his skills. And I don't know, again, I was optimistic coming out of our, you know, our week there, but if you ask me, is he going to be a Pro Bowl quarterback, I'm still taking the wait and see approach, because we just haven't seen him be consistent enough and accurate enough to play quarterback at the NFL position. I don't think we saw enough to say definitively I think he's definitely on the right track, but I think what we saw, at least from the competitiveness and the athleticism part, and how he was able to shoulder responsibility, I think those are all big positives for him.
Yeah, fair enough. Hey, Bruce, this is great. We hope to see you at the Combine later this week. Thank you for spending a few minutes with us here today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Looking forward to it, guys. Thank you.
Bruce Feldman joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Bruce Feldman is the author of the book, The Quarterback, The Making of Modern Quarterbacks, sideline reporter for the Fox Sports NFL broadcast, National College Football Insider for The Athletic. We thank Bruce for joining us. That's fair, his assessment of Josh, I would think, right?
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Yeah. And, you know, with me, and Steve and I go through this all the time, and I guess we have a habit of asking folks, what do you think of Josh? I'm perfectly willing to acknowledge that he's not a finished product and has much more work to come. And I think that's kind of what Bruce Feldman said too, right?
Brandon Bean said it at the end of season press conference. Yeah. He said he has not arrived yet. So, I mean, that's straight from the guy who's evaluating him every day on practice tape and game tape.
Yeah.
So I think it's a fair assessment, absolutely.
All right. Thank you to Bruce Feldman joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline presented by Subway Restaurants. Proud to be locally owned and operated. Today, I believe it's today, Chris, the NFL Competition Committee is meeting at the Combine.
Mm-hmm.
And they got some issues they're discussing, potential rule changes. We'll go through some of those when we come back in a moment. You can also weigh in on our Twitter poll today. If you were the Buffalo Bills general manager, what two things would you do this offseason? What two moves would you make? And get specific. Phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. Chris is in for Steve Tasker. We're back in a moment. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Tomorrow, we'll be at the NFL Scouting Combine tomorrow. Tomorrow is Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, 12 noon to 3 p.m. Combine coverage. We'll hear from head coach Sean McDermott. What do you think coach has got to say to us tomorrow?
Well, he'll certainly have to say about the new additions to his coaching staff.
Right.
He hasn't really spoken about that too much.
He
had one hire, I think, the last time we talked.
Bobby Johnson. This was at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
Who's he hired since then?
I don't think Bobby Johnson was not hired before the Senior Bowl, was he?
I don't know. Now I'm confused.
I can't remember now. It all blends together.
It does. So you can talk about that, the coaching moves.
Yeah, he's got an O-line coach, assistant O-line coach. He's
quarterback
got
coach.
I think Heath Farwell had been hired.
Farwell was hired there.
By the Senior
Bobby
Bowl.
Johnson was after. Had been hired. He was there.
He was there. Okay.
Yes. But you're right. They have Dorsey, the quarterback coach, has been hired since then. And what else can coach – what's he going to update us on? Can't think of much.
Well,
the signing of Spencer Long.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably going to get asked about, you know, what do you do with your current free agents, and he'll probably have a general answer for that.
General being the the operative term,
right? You know, he's not going to play his hand and let 31 other teams know what they're going to do. So why is he going to tell us?
Yeah, our question for you today, if you were the Bills GM, give us two moves you'd make this offseason. We'll take your tweets on it at One Bills Live. We'll take your phone calls on it at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Speaking of the new quarterbacks coach, Ken Dorsey, Chris, you wrote a piece that is up right now on BuffaloBills.com about Ken Dorsey, and you went to a guy who has worked with him. When did this piece go up? Yesterday, 12 noon. You went to a guy who has worked under Ken Dorsey to get some insight into what he might be like for Josh Allen, right?
Yeah, and the reason why was just in kind of researching where their two careers, Dorsey and Anderson's, intersected. Everybody knows that Dorsey was the quarterback's coach in Carolina when Derek Anderson was there as the backup behind Cam Newton. But Anderson and Dorsey were also teammates in Cleveland for a span of three seasons. Anderson was there from 05 to 09, but Dorsey was there from 06 to 08 as a backup. And what Dorsey did to help Anderson as the then starter at the time in 2007 when the team went 10-6, which I think is their best record since the turn of the century, the Browns, in the regular season, he kind of knew then that Dorsey had this keen ability to pass along solutions. And really what quarterbacks are problem solvers. I mean, they drop back to pass. They got to solve a problem, especially if the play doesn't unfold the way it was anticipated.
In about 3/4 of a second.
Right. And at that time, in 2007, the offensive coordinator was Rob Chudzinski. And Anderson, as I said, was the starter. Dorsey was the backup. Dorsey had worked with Chudzinski at the University of Miami his last two seasons with the Hurricanes. And he was familiar with the scheme. And so Derek, who's trying to pick this scheme up and master it as best as he can, is talking to Chud as much as possible. But he said the input he would get from Dorsey, having been in the system and played in it, was instrumental in helping him put together what was the best season of his career. I mean, 29 touchdowns against 19 interceptions and almost 3,800 yards passing on a Browns team that didn't have a whole lot to work with and go to a 10-6 record was pretty impressive. So then you fast forward, and now all of a sudden he's his quarterback's coach in 2013, and he was impressed at a different level because he saw him in a different light, obviously, as a coach, not a player. And he said the way he helped Cam Newton process the cerebral parts of the quarterback position was what was most impressive to him. Because we remember Cam Newton comes into the league in 2011, throws for 4,000 yards as a rookie. I mean, it's not like the guy was showing an inability to be effective as a quarterback.
Right.
He took his game to another level from a cerebral perspective and turned him into an NFL MVP in 2015.
Yep. I think, and I did say on the show towards the end of last season, I think David Culley did a really good job, a more than a fine job with Josh Allen this past year. But here comes Ken Dorsey with an entirely different background and skill set, right?
Yeah.
A guy who has solved those problems on the field in an NFL setting in the short time you have to do it. And as you point out, a guy who has already helped a young quarterback develop in his first couple of years in Cam Newton. And I think that bodes well for what Dorsey might be able to do for Josh Allen.
And a lot of people have compared Josh Allen's physical skill set to that of Cam Newton. So I think he's kind of got the same piece of clay to mold here that he did with Cam Newton down in Carolina. So I think there are enough parallels there that Dorsey, even though he's going to be the new guy in the room, will be able to kind of hit the ground running. Because that's one of the questions I asked Derek when I talked to him on the phone. I said, look, he's the new guy in the room now, though. This is a new scheme for him. You know, how is that all going to play out? And he said, I'm going to tell you right now. He said, the guy is already finding all the answers to how this offense operates against just about every defensive scenario you can come up with. So he will have the answers, he said.
And wait a minute, which guy? Who's already finding the answers?
Dorsey. Dorsey will.
Okay.
Because the scheme is new to him.
He's
getting up to speed on it. So when he walks back in the door in April with the players, he knows everything, soup to nuts, front to back, back to front. And Derek even said to me, even when Dorsey doesn't have the answer right there at the drop of the hat, he'll go get it for you and have it in pretty short order. So he's a detail-oriented guy. And I think the most encouraging thing that I heard from him, and I speak of this not knowing fully how all quarterback rooms operate, but the mental gymnastics that Dorsey puts his quarterbacks through, according to Anderson, is unique. He has not seen anybody do it with the variety with which Dorsey does. He's always tweaking it, changing it, and, you know, it's like a lightning round game show, and he's Alex Trebek. So, you know, it's an interesting approach to kind of keep young, developing players engaged.
If you watch the Bills in the offseason workouts last year, the OTAs, mini camps, if you were training camp, watch Josh Allen. If you got a chance to watch practice here, you could not find Josh Allen on the practice field without seeing Brian Daboll virtually right next to him. Do you think that will change now with Ken Dorsey in the picture?
No, I asked Derek that as well, and he said he fully expects Brian Daboll to still be heavily involved, but he sees Dorsey as a valuable counterpoint to whatever Daboll brings to the table, and he can get it down to more of a microscopic level from what Daboll really has time for. I mean, he's still got to run the whole offense.
He's still got to design a game plan every week.
Right.
That's a lot of work. That's hours and hours.
Right. And Dorsey's good at that, too, because he worked pretty closely with Chudzinski in formulating game plans and then did it at Carolina as well with the OCs there. So I still expect Daboll to have a very heavy hand in the scheming and the development of Josh Allen. But the point here is Dorsey can take it a step further. He's done it with players like Cam Newton, you know, who are similar in skill set, and he's done it very successfully. I mean, NFL MVP, that's a pretty good gem to have on your quarterback coaching resume.
Somebody brought this up on the show a week or so ago, Chris, and I think I am guilty, and maybe others are too, of underestimating how much benefit there will be this year, this offseason, this mini camps and OTAs and training camp, the time that can now be devoted to getting Josh Allen ready to play. There was a bona fide, legitimate three-way quarterback competition started last April, went right up until, well, I mean, it went into the season, right? Until week one of the season. That's gone now. There's time now to work with Josh as the starter. I think he will benefit maybe more than we even anticipate.
Right. No, I fully believe that. And reps are going to count for a guy that's trying to, you know, improve his game. He knows the areas where he has to be better. And I think because he is so dead set on being great that he will take the time necessary to perfect or at least improve those skills to a level that's going to help him win football games for this team. But swinging it back to Dorsey, the interesting thing here is Dorsey's got the coach's hat. And now Derek Anderson is in a similar position to where Dorsey was when he was playing as a backup. Because now, you know, because Anderson talked to me, he said it more than once about how valuable he felt Dorsey's input to him was. Because it's one thing to get it from your coach, it's another to get it from a teammate, a player that's in that room too. And now he's kind of wearing that hat that Dorsey first wore when he was a backup in Cleveland. And Anderson knows Dorsey pretty well. I mean, they used to hang out as teammates. He said it got a little tricky when he came in as a coach at Carolina because they still wanted to hang out, but the dynamic was different because sure. He was a coach, he was a player. But I guess what I'm saying here in a long-winded way is the pipeline of messaging doesn't only have to come from Dorsey to Allen. It can come from Dorsey to Anderson to Allen, and I think that will help because it won't be the same voice always in Allen's ear.
Chris's post is up now, went up yesterday on BuffaloBills.com. What can Ken Dorsey do for Josh Allen, the Bills' new quarterbacks coach? It's definitely a worthy read. We're going to get to our topic about the competition committee, but a call on the line about the question, if you were the Bills' GM, give us two moves you would make. Got a caller from Los Angeles. Patrick on the line from Los Angeles. Hi, Pat. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say I think the best way to address the tight ends and the wide receiver situation just to get a number one is through the draft. And now that I just found out, thanks to you guys, that Metcalf's dad is, you know, the legendary return man and specialist from the Browns, I feel really confident that he's going to develop even more into such a better football player.
Yeah.
Great.
You got the wrong Metcalf, actually. It's Terrence Metcalf, not Eric Metcalf. Terrence Metcalf was an offensive lineman in the league. So not exactly the same, but you can see where he gets his size from, certainly. So sorry to rain on your parade there.
No, you're saying DK Metcalf is the guy for the Bills? Is that what you called in to say, Patrick?
I feel like if we can pick up one of the superstar offensive tackles only in round one, the rest of the way it's like free agency. I think we can get some really good linemen. But I didn't see that the wide receiver and tight end position would be able to be fulfilled via free agency. Like, I mean, unless somehow we get Antonio Brown, which seems to be setting the internet on fire each way. But we definitely need a wide receiver one. It'd be awesome to have, you know, someone like an AB and Zay, and, you know, like from there on out. I liked everybody else that performed, like Foster and McKenzie, but it's like that would be an awesome starting four. Whatever, you need a real number one, and then the other three guys filling in, and, you know, Josh Allen coming back.
I do tend to agree with him. I think you need a proven number one receiver on this roster. You need a guy that when the chips are down and you need a play to be made, you have the guy that you target 8 to 12 times a game every week, and the opponent knows you're going to him and he still makes a play for you. That's what has to be added here. You have the role players in the receiving core. You know, you have Zay Jones as a slot. You have Robert Foster as your field stretcher. You know, you need the proven number one, and you may have to overpay a little bit to do that because it's probably got to be in the form of a veteran. Even though there may be some receiver talents that physically can play in this league without a problem, and, you know, Metcalf is a perfect example at 6'3", 220 pounds, and has a 12-pack instead of a 6-pack for abs, I still think you have to go with a guy who has been there, done it, and I'm not saying it has to be Antonio Brown. There are other options. But you need a number one guy that is getting 8 to 12 targets a week. He is the number one part of your passing game plan every week and delivers on top of that.
Can you get that in the draft?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't think so.
I don't either. I think free agency is the way to go with that.
Yep.
All right, we're going to take a break. We are going to get the competition committee agenda. We'll talk about that when we come back. Chris Brown is here with us till 3. It's One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. It's One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. Chris Brown is in for Steve Tasker today. I'm John Murphy. We're all headed to the Combine later today. We'll be there for our show noon to 3. Chris will have coverage of the Combine on BuffaloBills.com all week long. We mentioned earlier how the Combine is not just the prospects working out. It's sort of an NFL convention. And it's already begun in some form today. The NFL's competition committee will meet today with their annual meeting. And the biggest item on the agenda is possible expansion of instant replay. It all comes about because of the no-call in the NFC Championship game, the Saints' playoff loss to the Rams. NFL Network reports one committee member says he's not sure anything will be done to instant replay this year. They don't see enough support for reviewing non-calls, like the one that helped the Saints lose. That was kind of an overlooked thing about this call, Chris, that was not made. It was a non-call. So as much as you want to say, hey, Nickell Robey-Coleman interfered, yes, he did. Hit to the head, yes, it was. No call was made. So what exactly, how exactly would instant replay as currently constituted be a factor in fixing that call that cannot be really in a non-call? And I, for one, would hate to see non-calls subject to replay review. You know, something happens and no flag thrown, and then all of a sudden they can say, yeah, but you missed a hold on that player. You missed, in this case, pass interference. I think the commissioner said it at his State of the Game news conference in Atlanta a couple of weeks ago. What do you, you know, the unintended consequences of allowing non-calls to be reviewed by replay, it's something I don't know the league's ready to dive into yet. I agree with that.
It's too big a can of worms, and yeah, they're not big on opening cans of worms, and they're very concerned with unintended consequences, and you already laid out some that could crop up in the event that they do go that route. So I don't really anticipate that getting changed. I don't even know if they're going to even venture into the realm of calls that are made that are rooted in
judgment.
So pass interference, I mean, they've gobbed up the rule book enough already, so I'm hesitant to do it again. Basically, what this is there's probably less tolerance for having to take bad medicine based on an unfortunate circumstance that happened in a game than maybe there's ever been before. And people don't want to accept it, that there's human error in officiating. Mm-hmm. And there's always going to be human error in officiating because no one's perfect, especially for a game that moves that fast and has as many rules as it does. And when there are judgment calls, sometimes the right judgment's going to be made, sometimes the wrong judgment's going to be made, and everybody's got to live with it, whether it helps their team or hurts their team. I mean, I still remember the London game where the Bills wipe out the 28-3 deficit. They come all the way back. They're ahead 31-28. And the same player involved, Nickell Robey-Coleman, gets called for pass interference that was unequivocally not pass interference. He didn't touch the guy. And got flagged for PI. Jacksonville gets the first down, finish the drive, win the game. And, you know, did it suck? Yeah, really long ride home, I'll tell you that, coming from the other side of the Atlantic. But you got to deal with it and just suck it up and take it. And I just think there are less people than ever that are willing to accept bad circumstances due to human error and suck it up. You got to
sure
suck it up.
That?
I think
that there are less people ever. Because
we're in the on-demand generation here, Murph. People want something. They demand it. They can't get it. They don't understand why.
In the immediate aftermath of that call, and even, you know, 2 weeks later at the Super Bowl, you could still feel the heat about that non-call. And I thought to myself, this is big. People really want to change something as a result of that horrible non-call.
It was a terrible non-call. I don't think anybody.
I think people were upset about it, really upset.
No, I know that.
Not just in New Orleans.
Because it was a giant playoff game.
Yeah.
I totally get the outrage over the error, but the bottom line is you can't venture into these judgment calls and think you're going to fix it.
I agree, but I don't know that everybody agrees. I don't know that everybody's there where you say they are.
I just think it's unrealistic, and I think in this on-demand generation, and boy, I'm sounding like the get-off-my-lawn guy here, but
that's my role.
But I just think this on-demand generation wants answers for everything or solutions for everything, and I don't know that there is one here that can be practically applied.
Yeah. Sean Payton is on the competition committee, so that would make it an interesting meeting today in Indianapolis, right? Sean Payton, head coach of the Saints. Reviewing replay, not the only topic of discussion today. NFL.com says the committee will also look at potentially adjusting the punt play. In an effort to make it safer, as they did with kickoffs last year, the committee will also discuss the helmet rule from last year to decide if the rule change had the desired outcome. Well, it's okay to talk. At least they're talking. One thing about, and this is not a replay issue with the no call, the pass interference in the NFC Championship game, but we've seen it. What about the concept of a super official looking at video up top who can jump in and not by way of a replay challenge or even a replay review, but just say that's an egregiously wrong call or non-call, and I'm going to use my supreme authority here as the super official to fix that. I would not be in favor of that, but it seems to me a little more palatable than putting everything up for review. What do you think?
An official czar?
Yes. A guy
and
who
how
would
many,
be the super
and,
the super
and how
ref.
Many times can he wave his scepter per game?
Yeah.
Three times?
I don't know. The super ref.
Good Lord.
You would have an easier time talking me into that than you would expanding the use of replay. I really believe that.
As long as he gets to wear a cape.
You're not taking this seriously.
No, and I'm not. I mean,
a qualified official, maybe a guy who can't run up and down the field anymore, who can say in certain instances when there was an egregiously wrong call or non-call, I'm here to fix that. I'm going to fix that right now. Well, without looking at replay, without even worrying about
challenges. I mean, I think they would argue that they're already doing that with New York, you know, looking at all these things.
Except when there's the issue of a non-call.
Well, true. True.
New York was powerless in the NFC Championship game. What could they do?
What kind of salary could you get for that kind of a gig? Sitting up in the booth.
You don't take this
seriously. You're not in front of the public eye. You get to rule as you see fit. And nobody knows who you are.
What do you think went on?
You'd be making a ton of money that way.
What do you think went on in the during the NFC Championship game when that flag was not thrown? What do you think went on in New York?
Oh,
you know what I mean? Exactly. They're probably saying, call it, do something, right? What could they do? They couldn't do anything.
No.
Under the current
rules. I mean, I understand where you're going with all of that. But I think, again, you're talking about how many times does a guy get to weigh in on a game? Is it limitless? Is it only three? Is it fair if it's only three? Because those first three calls might go for one team, and then there might be three others later in the game that go for the other team. So now you make it limitless. Well, how much time are you taking? How quickly does he have to make the decision? You know, is he buzzing the ref down on the field? Does he have 10 seconds? Does he have a chance to look at a replay? You know, and then the argument becomes, if he's not going to look at replay review, as I think you just suggested, that guy from 300 yards away up in a box is going to make that ruling for when there's a guy on the field that's, you know, 15 yards away?
As opposed to not, I guess I'd prefer to say not, he's not going to not look at the replay, but there's not going to be an official challenge or an official replay review as currently constituted. Maybe the guy looks at their replay and say, whoa, we missed that. Boom. I'm changing it. It's just an idea. I'm not in favor of it, but I would listen to it as opposed to expansion of replay. I would listen.
Yeah, they can't expand replay anymore. It's too gobbed up already.
Yes. All right, we got a break here coming up. We're going to talk with Phil Savage, the former general manager of the Cleveland Browns. He's now the general manager of the Arizona Hotshots in the Alliance of American Football. What goes in to setting up a team for a combine? We'll talk with Phil Savage about that when we come back. Come on back to John Murphy and Chris Brown here for Steve. It's One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.